Hello and welcome to what are we doing here?
Episode 18
of In the Shadow of the Evening Trees. I have another podcast that I do that's based on the greatest band of all time, The Clash, and sometimes I forget what I'm doing. So I was about to say, welcome to 2 Minutes 59, which is the name of my Clash podcast.
There you go. But I'm Jennifer Von Ebers.
I'm David Von Ebers. We're disorganized and just kind of making it up as we go along. Let me rephrase that. I'm disorganized. No. You're not disorganized.
So last week we came on after a kind of a lengthy hiatus, you could call it.
It was a sabbatical.
We are on a sabbatical.
We're going to call it a sabbatical.
And we decided to bring the band back.
We're bringing the band back. We're getting the band back together.
So last week we kicked it off kind of again, and thank you for those who listened. We appreciate it. And I hope you follow us and look back at previous episodes to learn more about us.
Right, because we're fun.
We're so much fun.
We're a lot of fun. By the way, I have my Fighting Illini pint glass in honor of your University of Illinois Fighting Illini.
There's no beer in it.
There's no beer in it, so it's no fun, but there is water in it. But I have to say I found out, I want to say yesterday, that University of Illinois is one of only 14 schools in the country where the football team went to a bowl game and both the men's and women's basketball teams made the NCAA tournament.
That's amazing.
And I believe, we're recording this on the evening of March 15th, I believe that the women's team is playing tonight. And the men's team plays at something like 3:30 in the afternoon on Thursday. 3:30 Central Time on Thursday.
That's awesome. And if you don't know, David is an alumni of the U of I.
Multiple degree. Two-degree alumni of
And our youngest daughter is currently a student there. So our Illini blood runs deep.
It does. It does. And one of my siblings went to vet school there as well.
Yes.
So there you go. And I had a brother who had a band who used to come down and play there, and we would be on the guest list, so we were pretty cool.
VIP.
So, but that's not why you called, as David Letterman would say.
A lot happened from last week to this week.
Yes, it did. It was a wild ride. It was a wild ride. So we have to talk about this crazy situation with a guy by the name of Jesse Singal, S-I-N-G-A-L, who is he's one of these guys who's got a Substack. I don't even, it's like, so in other words, you're a blogger. Oh, no, I'm not a blogger. I have a Substack. Cool story, bro. But he's a blogger, essentially, and he also has some kind of podcast with a partner of his, podcasting partner. But Jesse is kind of, I would describe him as a transphobe. I'm sure he would say, oh, no, I'm not against trans people. I love trans people. I just have concerns and questions and whatnot. But we've heard that story before. That's a common thing. That's like J.K. Rowling is always saying, she loves trans people. And then she goes off on some completely insane rant about them. And then comes back to, but I love them. And all her little followers go, see, she loves them.
Yeah.
But he, he kind of, in a sense, is cut from a similar cloth. But before we get into the specifics of it, there's some background information that you need to know, and maybe you already do know. A lot of this has to do with an investigation that the Attorney General of Missouri launched not that long ago. I want to say that it was after the first of the year, but it was within the last 2 or 3 months anyway. The Missouri Attorney General's name, by the way, is Andrew Bailey. Okay, so this was an investigation that Andrew Bailey launched into a healthcare clinic that's affiliated with Washington University in St. Louis, but apparently has some other locations. And it is it's a clinic that, among other things, provides services to transgender people and in particular young people who've come out as trans or who are concerned about or unclear about their gender, let's just say. And so The clinic has been in operation for some time, and all of a sudden, this attorney general announces that he's been given information by some kind of whistleblower who's told him that the people at this clinic, the doctors and the therapists and so forth, have been mistreating young people, and he's going to kind of like blow the lid off of this clinic and demonstrate how terrible this clinic is, and demonstrate by extension, I suppose, how terrible it is to provide gender-affirming care for youth. Now, let me just stop right there. I mean, let's be honest when we talk about state attorneys general, or you can say attorney generals, if you like. State attorneys general are political actors. They are almost always affiliated with one or the other of the major political parties. They're Democrats or they're Republicans. They run for office on a political platform, just like governors and members of Congress and presidents and everybody else. And more often than not, when they get in office, and notice I'm not talking about Republican attorneys general versus Democrats, but that office in particular, when people get in that office, they tend to bring a political perspective to it, a political bias to it, and they tend to have a political agenda. And, you know, if you've been paying any attention, the Republican political agenda these days, among other things, is to beat up on trans and non-binary people, right? So when the Attorney General announces, the Attorney General of Missouri announces this, you know, big investigation, and he claims he's got all kinds of terrible evidence of wrongdoing, you have to take that with a grain of salt. You know, the attorneys general don't always act, you know, in the best interests of the people they represent. We've got a group of attorneys general who are who file a lawsuit to try to prevent the Biden administration from forgiving student loans. What that has to do with the job of an attorney general, I'll never know. But they've done it, right? These are political actors. They make political decisions. So when an attorney general announces some kind of big investigation like this, you have to take it with a grain of salt. Well, it turns out that the so-called whistleblower, and if we have time, we'll get into what is and isn't a whistleblower under Missouri law, but the so-called whistleblower is a woman named Jamie Reed, who apparently works for this clinic. I don't know what her exact title is, and there's been a lot of debate about what her job functions are, but at the least, she, you know, she answers phones, she talks to potential patients or the parents of potential patients, she helps set up appointments and things like this, and she has some input, I guess, into at least where to direct calls and where to direct patients. So she apparently signed off on an affidavit in which she claims things like kids were rushed into, you know, hormone treatments or puberty blockers or things like this without, in the mind of Jamie Reed, you know, adequate counseling or whatever. Although, and we can't get into all of the details of it, but if you read some of the information, including some of the information that Jesse Singel put out there, it's not at all clear that that's what happened. It's important to note, too, that there are parents of children who've been treated at this facility who've come out and said this is absolutely not true, it's totally contrary to what their experiences were, that, you know, the kids were given, you know, extensive therapy before any decisions were made about any kind of treatment and so forth. So her affidavit is hardly anything like, you know, conclusive proof that any of this is going on. That's point number one, that it's contested. In fact, there's a woman on Twitter and several people on Twitter who've been saying that this Jamie Reed lied to them about what was available in the clinic and basically told them false information about what they could do for their children and so forth. So there's a lot of information out there that puts her affidavit into question. But also, you have to understand something about what's going on here. As far as the state of the law in Missouri goes, there is no law on the books in Missouri that specifically bans gender-affirming treatment for trans youth. There's a proposal that Republicans can't seem to get their act together to pass in Missouri, and they left for the, you know, the legislative session ended without them passing anything on it. But the, as far as I can tell, there is nothing in the affidavit or the allegations that actually shows that anybody broke the law. And we don't know what this pending legislation may turn out to be. But in terms of the law that's in place now, that was in place when these alleged things occurred, so far as anybody knows, nobody actually broke the law, despite all the histrionics from the Attorney General. Okay, so that's sort of the background of this, the underlying dispute. So this guy, Jesse Singel, I keep wanting to call him Jesse Signal. Which is funny because I interacted with him quite a bit on social media, and I think most of the time I was referring to him by the wrong name, calling him Jesse Signal instead of Singel, S-I-N-G-A-L. Anyway, that's my slightly dyslexic brain transposing the N and the G, right? So he had an article on his Substack. Even calling it an article is a bit much, but he had a post on his Substack where he's defending this Jamie Reed from all kinds of accusations against her. And of course, too, a big part of this is his underlying premise is that she's some kind of whistleblower. And as I said, we can get into that if we have time, but I've read the Missouri statute on what is and isn't a whistleblower, and I don't see how she's a whistleblower. She didn't like the course of treatment that these kids might have gotten, but disagreeing with a course of treatment that's otherwise perfectly legal doesn't make you a whistleblower.
And none of her business.
And none of her business, right. But he wrote an article in which he, you know, he talked about information that he had gotten from this affidavit that describes things that children, minors, actually said to therapists. Now, granted, it didn't identify the names of these kids, but how awful is that to put something out on the internet that said, oh, hey, this kid told their therapist that they identified this way, and this kid complained about that. And, you know, this is utterly beyond the pale to be talking about information that was obviously confidential, given in confidence to therapists. These are minors we're talking about. And he decided that it made sense for him to put this in an article on his Substack, and it got a lot of heat. So a lot of people were coming at him from a variety of different directions, including, you know, was it a violation of HIPAA for this Jamie Reed to collect this information and give it to him? Was it a violation of HIPAA for him to then put it out there? I never got involved in any of that sort of debate. All I said was, I thought it was disgusting and gross and pathetic that an alleged grown man would write an article in which he includes supposed statements that children gave to a therapist. I mean, as a parent, I find that like incredibly vile. So that's all I said. I didn't accuse him of violating HIPAA or any other law. But he lost his mind at all these people who were coming at him sideways. And he started, you know, his big defense was, I didn't violate HIPAA. Like, oh, if it's technically not a violation of HIPAA, then I guess it's cool, right? And so, you know, he quote tweeted something that I said. And then, you know, that brought out all of his little trolls, all of his little obnoxious followers who attack and attack and attack. And all of them were going down the wrong path. All of them were saying, it's got nothing to do with HIPAA. He didn't violate HIPAA. I never said he did. I never actually tweeted. My voice is cracking now. I never actually tweeted that acronym, HIPAA, at any point in all of this, other than to say at some point, hey, I never accused him of violating HIPAA. But that was his defense. Technically, it was legal for me to do this, so stop complaining. But that, again, was not my complaint. So after all these obnoxious little trolls, and I mean, some of these people were like exceptionally vile. They were like saying like things that you would never say to a person's face, not without getting your teeth knocked out. And out of the blue, he says to me, this is all on Saturday of this past week, he says, well, why don't you come on my podcast and we'll talk about it? And my first reaction is like, yeah, right. I'm going to get ambushed on your podcast while all your dumbass little trolls are right out here dragging their knuckles on the ground and breathing through their mouths and drooling all over themselves. For your benefit, I'm going to go on your show and you and your podcasting partner can, ambush us. So at first I'm like, no way. How stupid do you think I am? And then after a while I'm like, all right, I got a deal for you. If you have Jennifer and me both on the podcast, I'll do it. And so he said, oh, okay, why not? Now, you have to understand, the reason why I said that was that I know this guy does not have the spine to talk trash to the mother of a transgender person.
Yes.
He can say all kinds of things. And this is their tactic. If you're a father of a transgender person, a supportive father, they come at you and say the vilest things, but they never say that to mothers of transgender people. And the reason is they're afraid of them, number one. They're afraid of the moms. And number two, they would never want the world to see how vile and disgusting they are. So if they attack some old guy on Twitter, it doesn't look so bad. If they attack a mom, then they reveal themselves for who they really are, right?
I'd also like to point out that I normally, in everyday circumstances, avoid confrontation at all costs. But the more that hearing what this man was talking about, just everything in general, I was like, why is it any of your business what some child is doing? You have no idea where they came to at that very point right in time. They could have been 3 years in the making, 5 years in the making before they hit that doctor's office. And you don't know any of the background information.
Right. And that's the thing. This is a guy who's not a doctor. He's not a therapist. He has actually no qualifications to make any determination whatsoever about the level of care a child should receive. You found pretty quickly after this first came up, you found an article that just sort of described his descent from writing a column maybe about, or an article about 5 years ago, where he actually talked to some trans parents about their kids and seeming to take a sort of a neutral point of view back then, to having kind of gone down this rabbit hole where he wants to interject himself in the decisions that parents make for their kids. There, in the article, we'll put a link in the show notes. In the article, they quote some of the things that Jesse apparently said on Twitter. Now, I haven't confirmed that these tweets are out there. But one example is he tweeted at a father. Again, they always want to come after the fathers. They don't have the sort of taste for going after the moms, but they like to go after the dads, you know, because they think that's easy. So he went after, a father, and he starts asking this person, this has supposedly happened in like 2021, a couple years back. So he says, one tweet that's quoted in the article says, there's a thread going around being retweeted very enthusiastically by everyone that I find really disturbing. Kid about to go on puberty blockers who doesn't appear to have gender dysphoria. That anyone thinks this is good baffles me. Now, how in hell would a Brooklyn podcaster, Substacker, blogger be in any position to say whether a child has gender dysphoria or should be on puberty blockers? Right there, to me, the guy had already lost his mind, quite frankly. But then he starts going on he starts directing his tweets to this father, and he says, what really gets me is no one ever asked, hey, wait a minute, let me back up. He says, he literally asked the guy directly to provide evidence of the kids like therapy and counseling. He says, in the thread, the dad explains that her saying on one occasion at 5 years old that she was a girl, pardon me, a girl, in direct response to his mom's priming, Like, how would he know what conversation actually took place in this home?
Right.
Help to explain the fact that she had preferred long hair, etc. If you don't find that troubling, and then he makes a shrug emoji. You know, he's literally demanding proof from this father as to why the kid was going through certain treatments and had certain therapies. Now, you have to understand something here. If a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old or some child who's very young comes to you and says something like this, you know, doctors and therapists aren't going to start prescribing medications for this kid. They might, however, consider like therapy. Like, let's talk about it. Let's get some sense of where the kid is coming from. Because, in fact, despite all of these accusations that clinics are pushing kids, they actually take a very long view of this. And so if a kid is 5 or 6 years old, doctors might recommend some therapy, and the kid talks to a therapist and someone who's actually trained, you know, to understand these things and so forth. And then, you know, when they get to puberty or approach puberty, there might be a different approach from a medical perspective. And then they get beyond that, there might be yet another approach. But what these folks like to do, what somebody like Jesse likes to do, is scare you with the thought that if a 5-year-old says, I'm a boy or I'm a girl, all of a sudden there's this huge medical intervention. That's not true. That's not what's happening.
No.
And beyond all of this, you know, this is between doctors and parents to make these decisions. It's not some blogger, podcaster in Brooklyn who should be making these kinds of decisions. So, you know, he's been going down this path for a long time where he's trying to interject himself without any qualifications whatsoever, to interject himself into the relationship between doctors and patients and parents and children because he thinks he's some kind of an expert. You know, at one point on Twitter, he never answered the question, but I asked him, do you have any children? And he never answered the question.
My guess is no.
Well, and here's the thing. I don't know. If he has children, he clearly doesn't want to talk about them on social media,
right?
So that shows you that he's got some sensitivity about sharing private details of kids' lives on social media. But he doesn't care if it's somebody else's kid. If he doesn't have children, then that's just like one more reason why he's got zero qualifications to be doing this, right? None. Okay, so let's back up a step. So this is where I came at him. I said, you know, this is gross. You're revealing private conversations that a minor had with a therapist. So he starts mocking me because he thinks that's somehow funny, that as a parent, I would be offended by this smug little 40-year-old sitting in his apartment in Brooklyn making fun of kids who go to therapy, I guess, or parents who care about it. I don't know. But anyway, so he makes this big show of inviting me on the podcast. And then, as I said, well, I'll do it, you know, with Jennifer. And so he says, fine, email me. So I did. On Saturday, I emailed him at the address that's on his Twitter bio, okay? Copied and pasted it, and I've confirmed multiple times that I used the correct address. You know, you could always make a mistake if you type something out, right? But I didn't type it out. I copied and pasted it. I sent them an email from our joint account. I said who I was. I said my name. I said Jennifer's name. I said, I'm the guy you directed all this abuse at, and now you want me to be on your podcast. Well, we're willing to do it as long as you answer our questions and we'll answer yours. That was it. Doesn't respond. So, you know, I keep getting these trolls coming at me, go, how come you're afraid to go on his podcast? How come? And even though I'd already emailed him and said I would. So I email him again on Sunday. No response. No response to the Saturday email. No response to the Sunday email. On Monday, he says on Twitter, oh, I still haven't heard from you about the podcast. So I said, yes, you have. You've heard from me twice. I've emailed you twice. And then I emailed him a third time on top of it. And he says, oh, I still never got the emails. And he's saying all this on Twitter so his little trolls can attack me. Oh, you're lying. You're afraid to go on his show. You don't know how email works. So then he says, okay, send me a, he follows me on Twitter, so he can direct message me, or I can direct message him. He says, send me a direct message with your email address so I can search and find it. So I'm like, fine. I sent him the direct message with the email address. And then on Twitter again, he says, nope, I still never got it. He emails me back, I never got it. So I literally, and then he took a screen capture of, a screenshot of what appears to be him searching his inbox for our email address. And it shows, you know, zero results. So then he did email me, right? And what I didn't realize at first is when he emailed me from a different account, right?
Right.
The account on his Twitter bio included his middle initial, first name, period, middle initial, period, last name @gmail.com. The email that he finally connected with us, when he finally emailed me, was a different email account that didn't have the middle initial, right? And I didn't notice that at first, but eventually I figured that out. But anyway, so I sent him the screen captures of all three emails that I sent him, and he kept responding, nope, I still never got him. I don't know what happened. Well, I know what happened. There's a couple of possibilities. Number one, he deleted them and then conducted the search so he could say that he didn't get them. Number two, he never bothered to look at the email account that's on his Twitter bio. He never bothered to check that account. I mean, how incompetent do you have to be?
And where would you have gotten his, you know?
Yeah, the only source of the information was from his Twitter bio. So you have to be like incredible. You either have to be incredibly incompetent. You know, I'm going to email this address. You don't bother to look at the inbox or the spam folder or the deleted folder or whatever. For that address. Instead, you're looking in a different email account. Like you somehow magically thought I was going to email you there. I got to be honest with you. I am absolutely sure that this was all a ruse and that he never intended to actually make arrangements with us. And he wanted to be able to say, I never got an email from you. I searched my inbox. He wanted to create the impression that I was lying,
right,
even though I was telling the truth. And the best part of it, the real icing on the cake, is that he left this one tweet up from Monday afternoon where he said, I'm still waiting to hear from you. He left it up, and people have been liking it and retweeting it and contacting me about it ever since for 48 hours, even though he knew by Monday night, he had absolute proof that I had emailed him three times. So he left this complete false impression, otherwise known as a lie, up on his Twitter stream so that all of his little knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing trolls could come into my mentions and harass me when he knew it wasn't true. So, you know, at this point, I put together kind of a long thread on Tuesday on Twitter, and I just said, hey, this is what happened. I explained it in detail. And I said, yeah, so no, I'm not going on your podcast. You're not a trustworthy person. You know, he couldn't even acknowledge that he made a mistake. He's either incompetent or he's a liar. But either way, he wasted way too much of my time. And I'm like, not a chance now, pal.
Yeah.
You blew it. You had the opportunity. You blew it. And I still maintain that he was afraid to do it. And he created this ridiculous and frustrating situation in order to sabotage it. Well done, sir. You did.
Right. And the other thing I don't realize or wonder is, and had we gone on his podcast, I definitely would have asked him this, is like, what is your stake in it? Like, why are you, you know, the transgender community has done nothing to you personally, then
right.
That why do you have to like create all this hoopla about absolutely nothing that has anything to do with you?
Well, and he's so smug about it too, and he sits there and he says, well, I didn't do anything wrong. Everybody's making accusations against this poor Jamie Reed, and I'm just trying to get at the truth, and then people are accusing her of doing, look, she's not a whistleblower as far as I can tell under Missouri law. Missouri law, for you to be a whistleblower, requires, I'm gonna quote the statute here. Just give me a moment here. This is, I'll pull this over. This is under title, oh God, it's, why do they use Roman numerals? Title 18 of the Missouri Statutes on Labor and Industrial relations. This is section 285.575. This is the Missouri whistleblower law, and it defines a person who is protected as a whistleblower under Missouri law as this: an employee of an employer who has reported to the proper authorities that an unlawful act of his or her employee, reported an unlawful act of his or her employer, an employee of an employer who reports to his or her employer, not to the state, but to his or her employer, serious misconduct of the employer that violates a clear mandate of public policy as articulated in a constitutional provision, statute, or regulation promulgated under this statute, or an employee of an employer who has refused to carry out a directive issued by his or her employer that, if completed, would be a violation of the law. Okay, I know that must have sounded jumbled, and I did stumble over the words, but here's the deal. Under this section, a whistleblower going to the a public official like the Attorney General is only a whistleblower if they're reporting unlawful conduct. The conduct has to be a violation of the law. Now, again, from what I can tell, there is no law on the books in the state of Missouri that makes any of this conduct illegal. If it's not illegal, when she went to the Attorney General to provide this information, she was not acting as a whistleblower. And a whistleblower can be one of three people, basically. One is a person who goes to the authorities to report an unlawful act. The other is a person who reports to their employer misconduct. And the misconduct has to be tied to a violation of the law, right? So in both of those instances, there has to be something illegal going on. But the first one is reporting to the public official. The second one is reporting to the employer. And the third one is a protected person under the whistleblower statute is somebody who refuses to follow a directive that would violate the law, right? She does not qualify, as far as I can tell, under any of those three. And if you can find a provision in Missouri law that these doctors and therapists and so forth have allegedly violated, then let us know. Let me know. You know, put a comment in here. But I am not aware of it. And as I said, while the Republicans in Missouri were trying to pass a bill that would outlaw gender-affirming care, they didn't get their act together to do it. The law is not on the books, and it certainly wasn't on the books back when any of this happened. So what we've got here is a podcaster, blogger guy who's somehow taken this bizarre, I would say perverse, interest in the way other people are having their children treated for gender dysphoria or who are dealing with a child coming out as a trans or non-binary person. He's got no stake in it, and it doesn't affect him. He has no interest in it, and he's got no expertise to pass judgment either on the parents or the doctors. He's taken this really, really, really bizarre fascination and interest in this thing to the point where he's decided to effectively align himself with a highly partisan political actor who is part of this nationwide attempt by conservatives and by Republicans to demonize and attack transgender and non-binary people, not just kids. They dress it up as protection of kids, but they're going after adults. They're trying to make people detransition. They're going after drag queens. You know it. You've read it in the news. You know what this is a part of. He's decided to align himself with agents of the state who are trying to bully and intimidate parents and children and doctors. And yet he's out here whining that people are pointing out that this is outrageous and ridiculous. So Jesse, you'll never listen to this, but if you ever did, you know what? I stand by everything I said about you.
Definitely.
All right. Well, so that was kind of a long-winded, roundabout way.
But it was a wild week from our very first My Girl thing till today. And that's like one of the reasons why we want to continue to do this, is to defend the transgender community. And because this is happening, everyone who is in that community can read and see all this happening. And it's just insane.
Well, that's the thing, is, and as other people have pointed out, you know, he'll say, well, we didn't reveal the kids' names. But they know they're in the news. They know they went to that clinic. They know they talked to therapists. They know that people on the internet are talking about the things that kids said to therapists. If they see their own words in your dumb Substack article, how is that going to make them feel? I say you're a bully for reporting that. I'm sorry, but you know that there's kids who are affected by this who could read that. You're a bully. And I'm glad I didn't appear on your dumbass podcast because, quite frankly, I don't think you even are capable of understanding or empathizing with this situation.
Or having a normal conversation.
Or having a normal conversation, right. So that's about it.
We're at the end of our time. We're going to wrap this up for this week. But this you can hear this podcast wherever you can listen to podcasts.
Right, as we like to say. Feel free to leave us a comment in the comments section on our website if you're listening to it on our website.
And share with friends.
And we will talk again next week.
Yes, we'll be back.